I was assigned a topic coming up in November in Virginia on Harrisonburg, and it got heavier and heavier on my heart and worrying about it. That's not a good word, but concerned about being prepared. And finally, I decided I want to speak on it here. And I would really, really like to open myself up to you all when I get finished and to this afternoon, tomorrow, whenever. Things that should be changed, added, subtracted, I would really like to hear from you on it. The title of it is Cultivating a Thriving Marriage. I don't know, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have been talking about it this morning anyway, and I don't know when I would have, but in fact, what I thought I would preach this morning was a message to the youth. Now, that one's still in the slow cooker. It's coming, Lord willing, and I look forward to that. Cultivating a thriving message. Where would you go in the Bible to start out preaching about cultivating a thriving message? I went to a verse that a lot of times is thought of for children, and we're going to apply it to the big children, to married couples. Ephesians 4:32. That's simple, isn't it? And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. And folks, if we go home and we as husbands and wives do that, we could just be dismissed right now and we'd be early for lunch. That is a powerful verse. Think about cultivate. It's to foster the growth of, to improve by labor, care, or study. Refine. It's to further, to encourage. Okay, you got the picture of cultivating. Sarah likes to go out and cultivate her flowers, and that means just taking care of them, mulching them, watering them, pruning them, whatever it takes to foster the growth and improve by labor, care, to further encourage growth. Thriving is characterized by success or prosperity. And of course, our desire is to have marriages characterized by success. And there will need to be energy, thought, and effort, or we could say in more down-to-earth terms, blood, sweat, and tears to achieve this kind of marriage. It's not going to come easy. It's not going to be just, you know, they got married and lived happily ever after. And I would just say a word to the unmarried people that are here. Before you think that there will be nothing here for you, almost all the principles talked about here are necessary to cultivate thriving relationships on any level. I hope you get that, young people, older people, whoever's not married. It just gets bigger doses of them for marriage. You just need bigger doses of them for marriage. And I know that's probably hard for unmarried to comprehend. But the closer the relationship, the more effort it takes to keep it thriving. And I do believe that the closer the relationship, the greater the rewards for the cultivating. You know how it is? If we're not satisfied with the country that we live in, what can we do? Well, last week we were in Canada. I guess we could move to Canada or Honduras, or we could pick another country, couldn't we? Or if we don't like Georgia, we could say, well, I'm going to go to and pick another state. And if you don't like the Buckeye community, I guess you could move to Minner or wherever, you know, get out, move out of Buckeye. And if you don't like a congregation, you know, church membership is voluntary. We want you here because you want to be here. And it's happened plenty of times that people pick other congregations. But it is not so in marriage. Jesus said in Matthew 19:4-6, I'm going to read these verses. And he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Jesus asked him, haven't you read this? Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Amplified says, let no one separate. There is something that starts at the marriage altar that only a death dissolves. Everyone married has promised the only thing that will cause separation is death. Not together until an argument. Not together until a fight. Not together until there are irreconcilable differences. But together till death. And this close relationship that has no back door, where we have the opportunity to be tested the greatest and at the same time learn the most valuable lessons if we make the right choices. You see, in this close relationship that has no back door, that's where we have the opportunity to be tested and to learn the most valuable of life's lessons. In this close relationship is where our true colors come out. It's where we are what we are when we're at home, in our marriage relationship, with our family. It's who we really are. I remember a few years ago, our family sang that song which says, if you want to really know a man, listen to his songs. John Paul Raber wrote the song. It's a nice little song. And we sang it, put it on the broadcast. And there was a man or a couple men, I'm not sure, from Shepherd's Fold that almost reacted to that song. They said, no, no, no. They said, my dad sang the right songs, but he was a bear at home. It's what he is at home is how you really know a man. So I contacted John Paul Raber and I told him that. And he put two more verses to it. It's interesting. He came up, he did a good job. So if you want to really know a man, ask his wife and children. That's how the song brings it out. And I don't want to just paint a possibility of sadness and grief in the home. But I do believe that the home is either the nearest to heaven on earth, or is it too strong to say the nearest to hell on earth? I believe that. And so what I want this morning, I want this to be a pep rally for us. And to where we are encouraged to go do what it takes to cultivate a thriving marriage. I have been blessed beyond measure to have come from a good home where I had parents who loved me and loved each other, loved their children, and where home was a haven, where there's good memories and a wonderful example. And I feel extremely blessed with a wonderful wife of 49 years. And I keep realizing more and more what a blessing we have had to be together. And I realize more and more as the days go by and the years go by that our days are numbered and that each day is a gift. And I realize more and more, I wish I would have thought about it more when I was younger, that time is too short to squander away with petty little arguments, petty little disagreements. There's a precious little time we have left together. Every day is a gift, and I hope that we can let this grip our hearts and from a mature way do what it takes to make the rest of our days that we'll have no regrets of. I hope this message stirs deep in our hearts to look at our homes with our children. I just love our children, and I know you do too. And evaluate what kind of a legacy we're leaving for them. I ask you, husbands and wives, what is your home like? Is it a place we try to arrange our schedules so we can get there? Or arrange our schedules so we can get away. And I want to assure you that the rewards for cultivating a marriage so that it thrives are of the greatest rewards that you can get on earth. When couples get to a hard spot and run, they never learn to become one. And they never learn the beauty of what God wants from a one-man, one-woman relation. So I encourage you, couples, face your problems. Don't be scared to ask for help on any level, with any problem, when we can openly, honestly, humbly ask for help, is the time that we're going to be the quickest to learn and to move ahead. And I assure you, you will never solve a problem by being secretive and closed and distant. So what will it take to cultivate so we have a thriving marriage? I had to think through the title a little bit. I'm not sure about it exactly, but it's okay. So if you have a thriving marriage, does it need to be cultivated? Well, I think it does, because you know how it is in the field. You don't cultivate your crops, you know what's going to happen. They won't be thriving long if you don't care for them. And I remind you, and you probably heard me say it before, that there's no marriage that couldn't have gone right. And there's no marriage that couldn't have gone wrong. To begin the practical part of the message, I want to go over what all of us married people have vowed. And I want to I just copied and pasted the vows that I asked last week in Alberta. And the first, do you believe matrimony is an ordinance instituted of God and confirmed and sanctioned by Jesus Christ, and that you must enter in the fear of God? And are you able to confess and declare that you are unmarried and free from all other marriage relations and engagements whatsoever? And then I asked, this is where it gets down to the practical part. I said, Brother Nate, standing by your side is Amber Torkelson, whom you have asked to be your wedded wife. I do want to emphasize here that while I'm reading this, I would like you to be thinking about it in regards to your marriage. And are you doing what you promised you would do? I'm not just reading this so you know what was asked Amber Nate. Brother Nate, standing by your side is Amber Torkelson. I can read this to the men. Dear brother, standing by your side was your wife, your girlfriend years ago, whenever it was, whom you have asked to be your wedded wife. In the purity and the strength of your character, and in your exclusive love for her in the marriage bond, lies increased happiness, security, and fulfillment for her. In the consciousness of these truths and in the solemnity and sacredness of these moments, I ask you, brothers, will you take whoever was standing by your side now in the presence of God and these witnesses ask her to be your wedded wife? Will you love and cherish her? Let these sink in. Will you love and cherish her? Will you provide and care for her in health and in sickness, in prosperity and in adversity? Exercise patience, kindness, forbearance toward her. Live with her in peace as becometh a faithful Christian husband. And forsaking all others, keep yourself only to her as long as you both shall live. And then to the other side, dear sisters. Years ago there was a man standing by your side that you had agreed should be your wedded husband. In the virtue and devotion of your life and in your exclusive love for him in the marriage bond lies increased inspiration, strength, and fulfillment for him. In the consciousness of these truths and in the solemnity and sacredness of these moments, I ask you, will you now in the presence of God and these witnesses take the man by your side to be your wedded husband? Will you love and cherish him in health and in sickness and in prosperity and in adversity? Share with him the joys and sorrows of life. Exercise patience, kindness, and forbearance toward him, and submit yourself to to Him and live with Him in peace as becomes a faithful Christian wife, and forsaking all others, keep yourself only to Him as long as you both shall live. Did you notice that in this vow there was no exception clause? You promise to love. You promise to submit. You promise to be there. You promise to put your best and all your energy, everything, into this relationship, only to be broken by death. Now, what is it going to take? I have a number of things making it practical. How can we cultivate to make it thriving? I wondered if we put on the board, if we put thriving on one side, so-so marriage is in the middle, and bad ones on the other side, and you evaluate your own, I wonder where we would put our marriages. I don't believe a marriage ever gets so good, it thrives so good that there's never room for improvement. I don't believe that. There's just too much of humanity left in us. So I hope that wherever you find your needle, I believe that we can, move the needle with the Lord's help. You can, with determination, with God's help. And so we want to make it practical. I don't even remember how many things I have. I believe it was 8 things. But anyway, the first one that I put is a desire. And I'm not putting these in any particular order. I'm talking to people who are professing born-again Christians. I take that for granted, that you love the Lord, that you want to walk with Him, you want to do His will. And if you're not that, then let's have an altar call and get saved. But the first thing we need as husbands and wives, I believe we need a desire. A desire to have a thriving marriage. And that has to come from the bottom of our heart. We must put everything into it. Maybe there does need to be a new commitment made. Maybe there does need to be a confession. Maybe there needs to be an opening and voicing a desire to be the partner that God wants you to be. But if you don't have that desire in your heart, if there's a coolness, coldness, callousness in your heart about whatever, I don't care, I can't, you'll never get anywhere. So there has to be that desire, and I believe we have that. A real desire. I want to be a better partner. And think about that when you get home today, tomorrow, the next day, and let it work out. And number 2, understand love. I think it's important that we understand love. And young people, you need to be listening here too. What is love? I want you to know love is not that rush of emotion that goes over you, over two people. The first time they saw each other, when the love bug bites, they say, it was love at first sight and all this. That's not what love is. Did you hear me? Love is the commitment of the will for the good of another. That has to be there a long time after the rush is gone. That's what you have to go back to. When you were just, blindsided with something that your companion did and you didn't see it coming and you're so surprised and maybe even hurt. I think all of us, if we were honest, we felt hurt already. I know my wife has. And when something happens, maybe it's some kind of words or actions, then what are we going to do? You're going to go looking for that rush of emotions. That's what the world thinks love is all about. And so when they don't get what they thought they had the first time they went out together, well, it must be somewhere else. I'm going to go look for it somewhere else, because I remember how, that euphoric feeling, that's not love. I want to tell you something about love. Well, maybe I ought to save that later on for the youth, but love is the commitment of the will for the good of the other. In other words, when something comes up and you just felt shorthanded, cheated, not cheat in the unfaithful way, but where you didn't get what you wanted, how am I going to respond? How am I going to respond? Can I come back with something that'll be just as hard for the other one? Or am I going to think, now, what will be the best in this situation? What will be for my partner's good? And when you can honestly think about that and choose that this is what I'm going to do, and it might be a kind word after a harsh word, but whatever it takes that is for the good of your marriage relationship and for your partner, for your spouse, that is love. And I want to tell you, it works. And that, my friend, must be there when the rush of emotion is long gone. When you make the right choices in a test, oh yes, there are good emotions that come with marriage. I don't want to act like that's unrealistic. No, I don't believe that at all. But those feelings cannot be the driving force in our actions, or it will take you wrong every time, because the old flesh is always craving after something that's not its to have. I wish it weren't that way, and I didn't think it was that way when I was young. But no matter where you are in your stage in life and the privileges and responsibilities that you're given, the old fleshly part of you will always try to tell you that it's better out somewhere else. That's where you can really get that old feeling again. Don't go there. Don't believe it. But when you make the right choices, yes, there are good feelings and emotions that go along with a good relationship. But you can't build on those. You build on doing what's right, living for the good of the other, and then take the good relationship and whatever comes. There's no end for looking for that high that the old flesh calls for. Many men and women have gone to drugs and pornography, looking for that sensational feeling again. But it's always an ever-increasing desire with ever-diminishing pleasure. And so they have to keep reaching higher and reaching farther and farther beyond to try to get. And did you know that that when people are on drugs and people that are addicted to pornography, do you know that does the same thing to your brain? It changes the makeup of the brain, and both are killers to good marriages. Pornography has killed many a marriage. It calls out an addiction just like the drugs do, wanting, and it's difficult to break. There is help. Okay, point number two was understand love. Number one was a desire for good cultivation. Two is understand love. Number three is be ready to forgive. Why is it so hard to forgive? You find it that way? Or maybe it's just as easy, your spouse does something and hurts you pretty bad, and oh yeah, I'm glad to forgive you. Yep, that's great, yeah. Let it go, and you know, you go on and everything's free and you're just, you know, happy. Well, it sure hasn't been that way for me. But we must choose to forgive. And forgiveness for our spouse must come from within. Yes, I forgive. I think too often we feel like it may be just an easy out for our spouse. And I think this goes either way. You know, if the other one does something that wasn't nice, and so they just say, well, I'm sorry, please forgive me, well, then it fixes it all up, right? And we're just, you know, think maybe We fear it's just an easy way out. I would say that for my part anyway, to offer forgiveness is hard on pride. It's really hard on pride to say, yeah, I forgive you. And then really let it go. And really accept my wife back as though nothing had happened. Completely release her from that. What about when forgiveness is not asked for? What about it? It's one thing if spouse says, will you forgive me? But what about if they don't? Could I just ask a couple questions? Do we have the right to hold them off? Do we have a right somewhere to hold a grudge? Do we have a right to be cold and distant? Do you remember what the last of our text verse says? Forgiving one another. And then it was like, Paul's like, I got to tell you a little bit descriptive about that, just like Jesus did in the Lord's Prayer. Remember when he said, you forgive one another? And then it was like, he's almost like, P.S., if you don't, God won't forgive you. And here Paul said, you need to forgive each other. And then, by the way, just like, how did he say that? Even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Forgiveness doesn't do away with the fault of our spouse. If a spouse has done wrong and you forgive in your heart, it doesn't clear your spouse before God. Hope you know what I'm talking about. It only releases you. It frees you. And then you can go back and do these other things, what it takes. Okay, number four is to go the second mile. Give what it seems to be 100%. I've heard, I think it was preachers say that it takes each partner giving 100%. And sometimes we feel like that. We're just human enough that we feel like, I've really gone the second mile. But keep giving, keep giving. The fruit of the Spirit talks about, you want me to demonstrate, Brother Aaron? Are you getting sleepy? You needed a demonstration. I remember Brother Aaron standing up here and he would talk about the fruit of the Spirit, and it says we're to be long-suffering. Everybody awake, good. Long-suffering. That's something in marriage too. What about patience? Meekness. Meekness. And I say that especially for the man, meekness, because we're the boss, right? We're the head. You know what meekness is? Meekness is restrained power. Oh yeah, you have power. You've got way more muscles than your spouse has. And you can say the word and tell her to go do what she's got to do and tell the children whatever. You got that power. But meekness, restraining power. Go the second mile. Number five is to communicate. Communicate. Big word, isn't it? You know what communicate is? Yes, the children know what communicate. You talk to your mom and dad, you're communicating. You go to school, talk to your friends, you're communicating. And so to us husbands and wives, communicate like you did before you were married. You talk. You can get on the phone. Send sweet text messages. Communicate. Invite spouse to share deep thoughts. Keep in touch. Stonewalling should never be, or it just won't talk to you. That should never be in our conduct. Number six is show appreciation. All right. Show appreciation. What about the dinner today? Thank you, dear. I appreciate it. That was really great. What about a warm smile? How long has it been? And I guess this should maybe be back up and communicate, but anyway, they're all mixed up. You separate them out. I'm thinking about showing appreciation, but yet when I start talking about a warm smile, that communicates so much. And I wonder, How recently have you looked at your spouse? How recently have y'all looked at each other right in the eyes, the gateway to the soul, and gave a really sweet smile? Is that asking too much? I know young people with girlfriends that just love to look at them and smile. What's wrong, men? I don't know why we can't keep a little bit of the romantic mood that we had before we were married. Why can't we help them to the car, talk nice to them, and not kind of snub them off? You know, if you're in a crowd talking to your buddies and your wife comes up and you almost act like she isn't there. Shame on us. She needs to be special to you. And if you want her to love you, if you want her to respect you, then love her. It's just the way the Bible puts it out. Husbands, love your wives and don't be bitter against them. And the wives, see that you respect your husbands. And if you don't love, she won't show respect. And you get on that crazy cycle. Well, show appreciation. Do some deed of service. Remember your partner's love language. Maybe you never studied love languages, but you better be studying your spouse's love language. If deeds of service are her language, then do something for her. It's not rocket science. Affirmation, touch. It wasn't hard while we were courting, was it? Try it again. Get anger and bitterness out of the way. You've got to get the anger and the bitterness out of the way. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Seems like that's a man's thing. And I've talked about the wives submitting to their husbands. The Amplified says, be subject out of respect for their position as protector and their accountability to God as is proper and not in conflict with Scripture. All right, number 7 is tenderhearted. Tenderhearted. Never speak unkindly to each other or about each other. I remember, and us older ones remember Dale Meyer, and I remember him telling the story about when he was in service in Wilmington, Delaware. He was orderly in the hospital, and the other men, they were just continually talking about, griping about their wives, how you can imagine. Finally, one of them said, hey, I don't ever hear you saying anything about your wife. He said, well, if I had anything bad to say about her, I sure wouldn't be saying it here. I thought that was pretty good. Never speak unkindly to each other or about each other. Tenderhearted. Give a warm smile. We've talked about that. Have a heart for your spouse. Men, you courted this woman, you convinced her somehow you were going to be, I don't even know how to put it in words, but somehow you were going to be something like nobody else would ever be. She took you up on it. Are you treating her that way? Should she still think that way? Be tenderhearted. Consider she is the weaker vessel. Do something to show a warm heart. And I know I'm harder on the men because I have tougher feelings towards us men. Because I had 6 daughters and they're all gone. Thank you, Henry and Tim, for taking good care of 2 of them. But you know, these men come along. I still remember Henry coming along and wanting to take me out to Cracker Barrel to eat. And I said, oh boy. Yep, he convinced one of them, and Tim convinced the other one. And then they're gone. Some of them go to Mexico. Some of them, Pennsylvania, you name it, Wyoming. And men, it depends. It's so much up to you. What happens to these sweet little girls that you came along and wooed away from their dad? That's why I'm harder on us men. That's why I come down pretty hard. We need tender hearts. Tender hearts. We don't need to be the tough macho man where we got it all under control. Do something to show warm hearts. Marriages without tender hearts for each other grow calloused and cold, leading to a miserable life. I've worked with couples already. I remember years ago, one lived up at the end of Earl Heat Wool's farm in a trailer. And the lady said, I just don't have love for him anymore. You ever feel that way? You just don't have love anymore. I don't feel love. What can be done? Is there something that can be done? I want to remind you that what you feed grows. And what you starve will die. And if you start, this is true on both sides of the house, you start doing something for your companion, keep doing something to show that you have that commitment of the will for the good of the other one, it can come alive again where the feelings can come back. But if you don't feed it, it won't grow. Okay, just a few suggestions. I have five suggestions for every couple here. Number one, do something kind for your partner. This is kind of a recap. Number two, speak a kind word of appreciation to him or her. Number three, look your partner in the eye and express your love. And remember the definition. Number four, ask God to make you the partner you should be. And I want to say here that that's more important than changing your partner. I don't know how many of you have tried to change your partner. It doesn't work real well. And you think, I was young and naive. And I guess it's okay when you get up about 70, you can talk about stuff that happened nearly 50 years ago, right? I found out that to love and to accept who she was and her upbringing and personality and temperament and just love the gift that I had been given brought way more results, better results, than when I tried to force change. It doesn't work very well. So ask God to make you the partner you should be, and that's much more important than changing your partner. You will seldom change anything for the good by coercion, pressure, or nagging. Number five, get closer to God. Almost never will you be close to God, but far away in heart from your partner. You think through that. Could you be close to God, but far away in heart from your partner? I don't think so. We talked about cultivating crops. And I remember cultivating when I was young. When I was a young boy, this was a big thing. Get out there and we had a two-row cultivator. And we had one that was a front-mounted cultivator. You men can understand that. And it was really neat because you could sit on the tractor and you could see right down there where those cultivators, make sure the row went right through. And as time went on, we did things to improve and make the cultivator better. We put on attachments to do better jobs. But now farming methods have changed and we don't run those cultivators. But we are still continually looking for better ways to bring more fruit as we cultivate the land. And I think this desire should never die. If you get to be married 75 years, that desire should never die. I hope this morning that your hearts have been stirred to drive a stake and maybe even to make some changes that will bring the fruit of a marriage blessed with his security and peace that God intended for the one man, one woman relationship. I want to close with a poem to help us consider what kind of an ending do we want when our steps grow slow, when the aches and the pains grow stronger, and when our minds begin to dull and our memory fades. How will it be between husband and wife? And then consider, will we be like this poem? The title of it is When One Is Left. And I know this is probably a strange and unusual way to end a sermon like this, but I've watched friends that were together many years and then one of them be taken. And I think this describes it so well. Two young trees grew side by side. The year was young and the sky was wide. The sun and the wind and the rain were kind, and their branches grew strong and intertwined. They weathered the storms that trees must face, and each stood straight with the other to brace. Now two old trees and one great crown. But the reaper came, and the one went down. Now the one left, there can never be the same. It stands only half a tree. So two young lives grew side by side. Their years were young, and time was wide. Our God was good and his blessings kind, and their hearts grew strongly intertwined. They shared both the sweet and bitter cup as they struggled and held each other up. There were storms that challenged and changed them too. There were failures and faith and a hard way through. A strand of gold through the years God wove, and it held them together, his gift of love. In the sunset's glow, they stood as one. Then the reaper came, and a life was done. Now the left behind one stands alone, and half of the life and heart are gone. But the God who gave is a God of grace, and his love is there in the empty place. May God bless you.